True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got a drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B-plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B-minus or a C-plus life, because when you're living a B or B-plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Where else in the world could a 4'11" Puerto Rican Jewish female with no family, no connections, no contacts come to LA and build the career that I think I built? I was an equity partner at 2 large international law firms.
Yeah.
I had a very successful practice. I made boatloads of money, all of which, not all of which, 90% of which I lost. And rise to become the city attorney as a second career. I can't think of another place in the world where that could happen. Where else can you go where you have the largest Korean diaspora outside of Korea?
Yes.
The largest Armenian diaspora, okay?
Right.
The largest Latino diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you come here and the vibrancy of our people, of our neighborhoods, of our culture, the activity and the tolerance and the unity that our communities hold for one another, the few dozen haters or notwithstanding,
right,
is really the defining characteristic of this city.
Yo, welcome to another episode of In a Minute with Evan Lovett, coming to you live from the IAM studios in the heart of Los Angeles. And in Los Angeles, we have a very important position that sometimes goes under the radar, city attorney. And I am here with Madame City Attorney Heidi Feldstein Soto, who is here to tell us about her inspirational origin story as well as her background, but also some important stuff that she's working on right now. So this is a very, very important episode. And Madame Feldstein Soto, I am extremely glad you're here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here with you.
A sponsor of our show is Ardo Brick. That is run by a gentleman named Armin, third generation LA American dream story. Family comes from Armenia. He manufactures brick and tile down in Gardena. And this isn't just any brick and tile. It's beautiful, made by hand, but it's historic landmark brick and tile. They fabricate for Alvera Street, for La Plaza de Cultura y Artes, Mariachi Plaza, USC, so many more. But keeping manufacturing alive, employing nearly 100 people down in Gardena.
What's the name of the?
Ardo Brick.
A-R-D-O.
A-R-T-O. A-R-T-O. Yeah. And he's a great guy and he has great social media accounts and he's really super. Again, we're so appellative of his sponsorship. And what's funny, I mentioned my wife's an interior designer. When he first reached out, we were first talking, and she was like, oh my God, Ardo Brick, like they're so good. They're notable. And it really is beautiful. I went down there, people there working on it by hand. It's gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. And again, you're talking historic landmarks in Los Angeles. You have to sort of refabricate. You can't, you know, get this stuff from those ages, but they.
You have to match the style of the original.
Yeah.
And you have to make it different enough that it's your own.
Yeah.
But you have to match the style. I mean, I love that story and I love that sponsor for you.
Absolutely. My first question for you before we get into anything at all, please tell us what the city attorney does, because I've heard about this forever, but I don't know. Tell me the roles and responsibilities of the city attorney and why it's important. It sounds important.
It's a huge job.
Of course.
And I thought I was prepared for it before I ran. I kind of was.
Yeah.
But this is the biggest job I've ever held in my life.
Yeah.
So issue one, I am the managing general partner of one of the largest public law firms in the country.
Okay.
I supervise about 1,000 legal professionals, depending on where we are in hiring and vacancies and budget on any given day. And they're organized into 5 unions. Of those 1,000, about 550 are lawyers. So that would be one of the biggest law firms in the city of LA.
Yeah.
Number two, I am the general counsel. I give advice on a regular basis to the city of LA and all of its departments and boards and commissions, proprietary departments. If you take a look at the Los Angeles World Airports, right?
Yeah.
LAX, Van Nuys, if it were privatized, it would be like a Fortune 1000 company. I'm the general counsel to the Port and Harbor, which with Long Beach is one of the biggest supply entry points into the United
States. Absolutely. We talk a lot about the ports over here. So that's.
And I have the pleasure of serving as the general counsel to the gift that keeps on giving, otherwise known as the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. And then there's, I don't know how many city departments, boards and commissions, a couple of hundred.
Right.
Everything from animal services to the zoo and small little departments in between, like public works and housing and planning and land use, the LAPD, the LAFD, you name it. We give advice.
So under your purview, I understand there's at least 1,000 staffers, 500 attorneys. Are those numbers accurate?
Yeah, it's about 550 attorneys. But
that is a huge team. Just first and foremost, with all those departments, everything going on, just first and foremost, how do you even manage that?
It takes a little bit of management skill.
Yeah.
We have a structure across the city. Yeah. We have 17 different locations, my office. So we co-locate the airport lawyers down at the airport. We co-locate our lawyers with the clients in many situations. I get weekly reports.
Yeah.
I structure it with a leadership team. I think I have 15 people, 12 people on my leadership team right now.
Yeah.
So there's a chief for each branch, and then there's chief deputies and some executives for external. And I get weekly reports from everybody. We have a weekly leadership meeting where we go through everything. And I have an open door policy. It's not a command and control. Yeah. Like anybody on the line who sees a problem.
Yeah.
Call me. I'm available.
That's excellent. You got that, staffers? Call if there's any.
they know that. Trust me. Although they usually have to go through my scheduler just to get time.
I was going to say, your schedule's got to be completely out of control. There are so many demands on your time coming from these. I mean, you just said even DWP alone, the ports, the airports, that's incredible already. And that's just part of it.
Add to it the fact that every contract over $25,000 goes through my office. It has to be approved as to form and legality.
Right.
I'm also the shield for the city. I represent the city in every claim, every litigation, every single time somebody complains or sues the city.
Right.
Comes to me. Al Franken, as he would say, right?
Okay, fair.
And I have, I am the chief prosecutor for the city of LA. So I prosecute misdemeanors committed by adults within city limits.
Okay.
And then since I took office, I formed two new branches.
Go on.
You want to know why?
Because you just needed more on your plate, right?
No. The first branch that I formed was real estate.
Okay.
And the reason why, when I came into office in 2022, remember, my predecessor's office had been raided by the FBI and the DOJ.
Okay.
We had half a dozen senior lawyers kind of under investigation. The former GM of the DWP had been convicted and pled guilty to a bribe of $1 million and was in jail. So I came into an office that had all kinds of problems. The former head of the litigation branch was taking referral fees from law firms that regularly sued the city. And so the first thing I needed to do was to provide transparency and accuracy and clean things up. Most of the so-called corruption in the city came from real estate. The three council members who had been convicted.
That big story,
It was all land use. It was all real property.
Right.
So I formed a brand new branch where I could see it, look at the structure, and I brought in somebody from the outside. To make sure that that was run clean.
Okay, so that was the first.
The second one is public rights.
Go on.
There's a number of wrongs that individuals can't get justice for. If you think about it, whether it's small little fees that are excessive or inappropriate, or it's mistreatment of the commons, or it's just hard for normal people to protect their rights under the law sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So public rights is the concept that the chief prosecutor for the city can exercise its civil prosecutorial authority to do things like unfair competition, to do things like nuisance abatement,
right,
environmental justice, consumer protection, wage theft. And I thought when I got to office, all of that work was in the criminal branch.
Right.
And that made no sense to me. Right,
makes sense.
So I pulled all that out, formed a public rights branch, and promoted someone in the office who's been terrific just to be the chief of that.
So now when you were elected, I want to mention something that I should have mentioned in the intro. You were the first Latina elected to a citywide office in Los Angeles.
Correct.
That's a pretty damn impressive accolade and accomplishment. And very important in this city.
I would say long overdue, but okay.
Yeah, so we were looking at what, 170 plus years when you were elected, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So that first and foremost, here's what I want to know. You weren't necessarily a brand name, but you had a great, you were a bankruptcy and finance attorney. What kind of attorney? Tell us about your background just legally before you were elected.
I got to LA in 1982.
Okay.
I did a little bit of litigation, a little bit of tax work. I went into restructuring and bankruptcy law for about 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
And that's where I cut my teeth. When the economy got healthy, I turned around and I started doing front-end finance work. I don't really have the temperament for bankruptcy work. It's a rather contentious practice.
Right.
And I like to bring people together. I like to collaborate.
Okay.
So when I describe lawyers, and this is my personal opinion, litigators have to be the most aggressive in the world.
Right.
To win in litigation, you have to want to kill the other side. Okay?
Okay.
M&A lawyers, kind of transactional lawyers who do a deal quickly, kind of a one-night stand, you have to be nice enough to get the deal done.
Right.
I was a finance lawyer. Whether it was an asset-based loan, whether it was mezzanine financing, whether it was a new financial product or an unsecured bond, at the end of the day, these deals had to last 5, 10, 20, 30 years.
Okay.
So it's like a long-term marriage.
Yes.
You have to craft documents. You have to have an attention to detail, and you have to want to make a deal. And for me and my temperament, that was really much more satisfying. So that's how I spent most of my career, was really doing finance deals.
So then what made you at that point want to run for elected office?
Because the city was broken. I mean, look, there's a push and a pull to everything.
Right.
My father died March 20th, 2020, but who's counting?
Sorry to hear that.
He was 2 months shy of his 98th birthday. He lived a long and full life.
It's good. It's good life.
But I adored my father.
Right.
And when he died and I saw his obituary, my father was a really good human being.
Right.
He was a corporate lawyer by day and a do-gooder by night.
Okay.
And he did all this wonderful good work.
Okay.
And I looked at my life and I thought to myself, what have I done except write checks? Seriously. I hadn't done any good.
Wow.
I hadn't done any public service. Oh, yeah, I would go to downtown LA, you know, maybe once a month and cook breakfast for unsheltered folks down at the St. Francis Mission, or I'd go down on Thanksgiving to, you know, the LA Mission. But I hadn't really invested in my community, in my city, in my people. And I was, you know, grown. My son was gone. I was divorced. And I took a look around and I thought to myself, I haven't done 10% of what Papa did to help the world. The second piece of it was the city was broken.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, I looked at the scandal after scandal after scandal. I looked at the dysfunction that I saw, particularly, and it was an open seat. I don't know that I would have run if it wasn't an open seat.
Right.
But I've always had problem solving and emergency management as a skill set. And I thought to myself, this is a job that I would be good at if I can get it.
And what did you think? What was your, when you were first running as, again, like, you know, it's a tough position, especially for somebody without a background in politics.
I had no background in politics.
Correct. So did you think that you could win when you first threw your hat in the ring, let's say?
Of course, otherwise I wouldn't have. Okay.
Okay.
I thought that the city was ready for mature adult competence. I thought the city was ready for someone who did their job and did it within their lane without trying to be all things to all people. And I was right.
Yeah.
I mean, I got lucky. I squeaked through the primary without a lot of votes, but I won against a very left progressive candidate by 10 points in the last time. And so from my vantage point, I love the lawyering part of it.
Yeah.
I like being a lawyer. Right. I like fixing things for people. I like managing the office. I don't like the politics. I don't like being yelled at all the time.
You're in the wrong profession.
It's okay. No, my skin's gotten thicker.
Yeah, I figured.
I've developed a lobster exoskeleton because I've had to.
You need it. You need it. Yeah.
You know, the people who are happy with you don't really tell you often enough.
Yeah.
It's only the haters.
Yeah, the loud. Oh, we know that. Absolutely. Loudest voices in the room, right?
I went to an event for, I think it was Democrats for Israel last month.
Okay.
And some gentleman came up to me and said, you know, I saw you on, I think it was Conan Nolan, and you did a great job. Thank you so much for what you're doing. And I just kind of looked at him and I said, thank you for saying that. You don't know how rare it is that somebody says something nice.
Right.
Usually if you appear on something, even if you've talked to somebody for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
When people come up to you, they're going to find the one thing that you said that they disagree with. And that's what they want to talk to you about.
You know, that's my wife and I have been having this discussion about, is that human nature? I mean, and how long has that been the case? Is that exacerbated by social media? Anyway, that's philosophically for a different conversation. We could take that one offline. But tell me about the campaigning, though. As somebody who hadn't been in politics, how was that experience for you? And you're also in another campaign upcoming this year, is that correct?
Yes.
For re-election? Okay.
And it's very different.
Right.
The last time I was in a very crowded field initially.
Yeah.
There were seven of us. And I just kept going. And I am, it may not be popular these days, but I focus on the issue, 80% of the issues that 80% of us agree on.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am very much a centrist. I'm very much about bringing people together. And so I just stuck to that.
Yeah.
When I came out of the primary, four of the five opponents who had been eliminated endorsed me.
Awesome.
I hired one of the guys who ran against me, and I promoted another one of the guys who ran against me. So I built relationships even there.
Yeah.
This time it's uglier.
Yeah.
Because I do have two opponents, neither of whom I don't think either one has sat first chair on a case.
Wow.
I don't really know that, but not a lot of experience. Certainly neither of them has managed a group of people. And so there's an old saying in the law, the law is on your side, pound on the law.
Yeah.
If the facts are on your side, pound on the facts. If neither's on your side, pound on the table. And so a lot of what this has turned into is pound on the incumbent. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's okay.
And that seems to be a lot of politics these days, that philosophy sort of holds true, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I've done a lot of good work.
Yeah.
And whether it's trafficking or it's the ICE raids or it's the reorganization of the office and shutting down avenues to corruption, or it's bringing the city back to a place where we're enforcing the competitive bidding procedures of the city charter.
Yeah.
Wherever you look in my office, I've really devoted myself to the job. And most people see.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy six Celsius Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1 liter flavors and get the seventh free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got a drink for you. As a true rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North convenience stores and true rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
See that.
Let's talk about this, because this is an issue. And this is one of the reasons why we had you in here, is I used to have a colleague that would pound the table, but not in the political sense. But look, and I come from this naive upbringing, two great parents, super supportive, rose-colored glasses. That's, you know, why Ellie in a minute is overwhelmingly positive. You know, I love this city, greatest city on the globe, despite the problems and the issues.
I love the city.
And I don't want to get into that too. I want your relationship with LA. But she would always tell me, she's like, do you understand how big of a problem human trafficking is? And I was like, yeah, you know, you hear about another country. She's like, no, right here in Los Angeles, this is serious. She's like, you need to start talking about this. Like, on Elliot Minute used to, and I was like, not quite ready to start talking about that. And I didn't know, you know, and again, this is naivete on my side. I knew that it existed, but it was, you know, it's one of those issues. And then it sort of get in the muck and people like Still Brazy, who's this photographer that gets this access. And then you start seeing stuff along the Figueroa corridor that became a major narrative. And all of a sudden that issue became pretty prominent, you know, even in my, with my rose colored glasses and everything. And you're making major progress on that, whether it's prostitution, underage prostitution, outright human trafficking. Tell us about the lay of the land and then the progress that your office has been able to make on that.
I moved to LA in 82 and I lived most of my time in LA on the west side.
Yeah.
I considered Beverly Hills the east side of town. Okay.
Okay.
Because right. I lived in Mandeville Canyon from 1984 to 2016.
Yeah.
So I had never been to any place like the Figueroa Quarter.
Yeah.
I had never seen anything like it. The closest I could analogize it to was the red light district in Amsterdam.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there it's at least regulated and clean. When I was running for office, there's a wonderful detective with the LAPD by the name of Mike Ventura. Some people call him Ace, but no, it was Mike.
Okay.
And he took me on a ride along. And he took me to MacArthur Park.
Yeah.
And he took me to Union Station. And he took me to the Figueroa Quarter. And it sort of stuck with me a little bit.
Yeah.
After I took office, now Council President Marquise Harris Dawson, then council member. And
friend of the show, by the way. Thank you.
Mayor Karen Bass.
Yep.
Took me on a ride along to the Figueroa Quarter during broad daylight.
Yeah.
And there you can really see what was going on.
Yeah.
And there were throngs. I'm not talking one or two or six. I mean throngs of young, mostly girls and women, a few boys.
Right.
In various stages of undress, yep. Parading up and down the corridor in broad daylight. And there were cars making U-turns and sharp lefts and lining up for sexual services. What really was a gut punch to me was the kiddie stroll. You ever seen it?
No. What is that?
K-I-D-D-I-E.
Oh, kiddie. I thought you said kitty. Yikes.
No, okay, kiddie, child.
Yeah.
Okay? And they had, again, these little girls with hyper makeup, okay, and false eyelashes, pretty close to nude.
Yeah.
Being paraded around usually with what they call a minder. A person walking half a block behind him whose job it was to make sure that the child didn't get away or ask for help or talk to anybody other than a customer.
Wow.
And I couldn't bear it. I just went back to my office and I immediately, because this is how I do things, I wrote a roadmap. I sat down and I said, okay, what are the objectives? What's the goal? How am I going to get from here to there? And who do I need to partner with to do it?
Right.
And the objectives is written in that original roadmap were number one, rescue the kids. I've got to get these kids a path off the street if they want it.
Yep.
Number two, the focus of our enforcement has been wrong. We have been criminalizing the victims. Disrupt the demand. Make it expensive for the buyers, the exploiters, the Johns.
Yeah.
Okay, shift the focus so that the guys who are buying kids for sex become the criminals.
Were there no ramifications on that side previously? Or no lax enforcement or what?
Boys will be boys, I think, was the attitude. Okay, and it wasn't viewed as a trafficking problem.
Yeah.
It was viewed as an allurement problem, okay? So I wasn't the first to come up with the decriminalization of the victims and shifting the focus. But I think I was the first person in my office to really do that. The third prong, which only I can bring, is the crime magnets, the motels that were not in compliance and that were serving as like brothels, open air brothels
like
for this kind of activity.
Motel, yeah.
And the final objective was to put the predators away. The folks up the food chain, making the money, branding the kids with their name. I mean, you should see some of these pictures with the tattoos. They're branded like cattle.
Wow.
And I wanted to put those bad folks away for a long time. I've added two objectives to it in the 3 years I've been doing this work. One is public awareness. We must, in order to succeed and do this work, we need to get the word out. We need help from the media, from folks like you, so that people understand what a scourge this is. And the other one, candidly, is environmental work. Because with the street lights out, with the trash piling up, with the obscurement of encampments, the trafficking takes place hidden in the dark in places where you can't even interrupt it as part of law enforcement.
Wow.
So it becomes necessary to open that up to sunlight.
Okay. So what is the progress? And I'm on your email newsletter, but explain what are some of the progress and the arrests and things that have been happening so far.
Well, with the motels, the goal is always to achieve compliance. I'm not interested in putting legitimate businesses out of business.
Yeah.
We don't have enough business in LA. Okay. So from my perspective, the first thing we did was we rolled in and we made them all put up human trafficking signs, so that the girls who didn't want to be in the life knew where to call.
Right.
Council member Harris Dawson gave us money to put up surveillance cameras. We mapped out the corridor and we decided to start in the middle because it's 5.5 miles long.
Yeah.
And we figured if we could cluster bomb it in the middle, that would break up the corridor and we could start moving north and south.
Right. Right.
And so we started on the corner where Kip School was on one side and Coco was on the other side of the street.
Okay.
And we started with sweeps with the LAPD. As I told you, I'm collaborative.
Yeah, I was just going to say, how do you coordinate all that and make that the priority slash mission?
The two meetings, well, we had lots and lots of meetings.
Of course, I could imagine.
But the first two meetings that I recall, I convened it and I called the U.S. Attorney, the Attorney General of California, the DA, and me. And we went to a meeting at the U.S. Attorney's office, of course, because I love Martina Estrada, but he had the biggest office and he wanted us all there. So we went.
Okay. Okay.
And then U.S. Attorney Estrada showed up with five lawyers. I showed up with five lawyers.
Yeah.
Attorney General Rob Bonta showed up on the phone from Sacramento with, I think, three lawyers. And District Attorney George Gascon sent one of his deputies in charge of sex crimes and another deputy who is retiring in 30 days.
Okay.
So we formed a task force to attack this work, and most of the burden really fell to the U.S. Attorney's office. There was a assistant U.S. attorney there by the name of Jeff Chemerinsky, and we worked very closely with him. I appointed some lawyers in my office to work on it. We then reached out to the LAPD. And it's a subject of some controversy, but at that time, all of the LAPD photographs had just been published on a website called Watch the Watchers, including the undercover cops. So we reached out to the FBI, to the Department of Homeland Security, to the Sheriff's Department, and to the CHP. And they helped us, and they helped provide some undercover and some support for the initiative. And then we reached out to service providers. Because this is not just a crime-focused initiative. This is with a focus to make the lives of the kids better.
Right.
And so we partnered with Journey Out, with the Children's Institute, with a group called Sister Friends, who are themselves survivors of the trafficking on FIG. I was surprised to see that we didn't have a partnership with a Spanish-speaking group. So we partnered with Expediente Rojo.
Right.
We went out and we formed relationships with survivors and organizations geared towards survivors. And God bless my team of dedicated prosecutors in this area, because they would roll out when needed to calls. And we just started working. We started looking at surveillance videos. We sent out Dear John letters. Do you know what a Dear John letter
is? No, tell me. I know what a John is, but
he's a buyer.
Yeah.
John's a bad guy. He's off buying a kid.
Right. But
we had the surveillance cameras.
Yeah. Oh.
And so we would take a video.
Yeah.
And we would catch the car with the license plate.
Right.
And then we would catch a photograph of the man, because it was almost always a man. Okay.
Right.
And the girl.
Hey, boys will be boys, right? Yeah, right. Go on.
Negotiating the deal.
Wow.
Or walking up the steps to the motel. And it was clearly visible. We didn't do the sex acts. No. but we did catch the transaction.
Wow.
And then you write a letter. Dear registered owner of the vehicle, your automobile has been seen in an area that is known for the human trafficking of children. Okay, please be advised we're conducting operations in this area and you may want to be more cautious. We would include the picture with the letter. Want to take a guess who the registered owner was?
I mean, the
wife.
I was going to say you should CC. I was thinking you should CC the wives.
And no reason to CC.
Yeah, right.
The car was almost always registered to the wife. So that was the first warning shot. Okay.
Yeah. Great plan, by the way. Okay, go on.
I wanted to go one better, but my office wouldn't let me. You know how billboard companies donate sometimes space to good causes?
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to take one of the big billboards, the Jumbotrons, and live stream the activity with a close-up of the face of the Johns, but nobody would let me do that, so we didn't do that. But we still have creative arrows in our quiver if we need them. The short version is we sent out over 2,000 of these Dear John letters.
Holy crap. In what period of time?
The first letters started to go out in June of 2023.
Okay.
And I think my numbers are good through fall of 2025.
Wow.
So that's when we did it. We arrested
three a day, yeah.
Or cited over 200 Johns. We prosecuted some of them.
Yeah.
The one I'm proudest of, there's a prosecutor in my office by the name of Ralston Henry, who took one of the cases straight off the Figueroa order.
Yeah.
And it was a 49-year-old man with a 14-year-old girl. And we charged as many charges as we could.
Yeah.
We, as we always do, ask the judge to sentence to the maximum for each charge. And then we ask the judge to run the sentences consecutively rather than concurrently. Ooh. So even though my office for a misdemeanor can only get up to 1 year, if you have eight charges and it's up to 1 year per charge, that's 8 years consecutive.
Right, right.
And so that's what we've done. We've also emphasized having these predators, these Johns, be registered as sex offenders.
Yeah.
And really gotten keep away orders to keep them away from children.
Now, what progress has been seen on the trafficking side, if any? Because that's a different kind of issue. I don't even know how that, and I hate to put in these terms, but supply chain works, you know, like that.
We have rescued over 250 minors.
Yeah.
I wish I could tell you that they've all stayed safe.
Right.
That's not true. There is some recidivism. But as I like to put it, a lot of them have stayed safe. And I still remember the very first victim that we rescued as part of this initiative. I think it was in July of 2023.
Yeah.
And she was 14 at the time.
God.
We delivered her to a service provider. I mean, we don't do that. Minors are obviously under the county.
And I'm sorry, what is a service provider technically in this context?
Somebody like, I think she, I don't remember who she went to, but someone like Journey Out, someone like Forgotten Children, Inc.
Okay.
It's a group of trained, it's basically trauma-informed care. So there are centers for survivors of this kind of activity. One is the Stewart House in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
Another one is the, I'm always going to get it wrong, it's CATS is the acronym.
Yeah.
But it's a coalition or Center for Assault Treatment Services.
Okay.
And obviously my people are lawyers. We're not counselors.
Right.
But we help. And this particular young child, well, a teenager, we reunited, well, we didn't. The service providers and the LAPD and the county reunited her with her biological grandmother in a location far away from the corridor. And that's the key. You have to get them out of the geographic space.
Yeah.
And last I heard, she's doing well. She's in high school, different name, no addiction, no issues.
Wow.
Just managed to get her life back.
I mean, that success story is, I mean, that's a great success story. What would ultimate success look like for you in this issue? What is the ultimate goal? I mean, to end it completely, yes, but in a realistic sense, what can you do and what can you hope for?
As with most crime, the more blatant it is,
yeah,
the more acceptable it becomes and the more people fall into the life. My concern with the Figueroa Corridor was on multiple levels. In addition to the victims, what you have along that corridor is 22 churches and 12 schools. 12 schools.
Wow.
You also have parks. You have urgent care. You have hospitals. And it's a working class neighborhood.
Yeah.
If you walk around that neighborhood, it's, you know, working class families. And seeing the children have to go out to walk to school and see this activity was unacceptable to me.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to push it into other areas or into darkness, but I want to dampen the ability of people intent on engaging in this kind of illegal activity from at least doing it on my streets.
Right.
Don't do it openly. We will come for you. We are no longer turning a blind eye to this kind of activity. I'm very proud of that fact. I'm proud of my partnership with this DA.
Yeah.
You know, since DA Hochman was elected in November, we have been, and I'm not saying we agree on everything.
Right, of course.
But we have been able to work together in the areas in which we agree. And these trafficking initiatives have been absolutely critical. And his participation is key. I don't have felony jurisdiction.
Right. So you need to work together. And again, you bring people together. That's part of your overall ethos right there. Wow, that's incredible. Now, how do you, focusing on issues like this that tug at the heartstrings, that are such emotionally driven issues, takes a lot of resources, takes a lot of time. And you have all of these responsibilities, all these different departments, and your team and staffing. How do you prioritize where the work and where the efforts go?
I have great people in my office.
Yeah.
I have really dedicated, hardworking public servants. We manage. I don't know if you know, there's a famous line. When the Russian ballet first started coming to the United States in the mid-70s,
yeah.
If you know anything about ballet, an American ballerina does a trick called spotting. She fixes her eyes on the wall, and her body turns, and then her head whips around at a different rate. That stops you from getting dizzy. As someone who studied ballet, I can attest to
that. Good trick, okay.
When you look at a Russian ballerina, she spins like a doll on a music box. Just spins, body and head. And someone asked one of the Russian ballerinas who came over with Mikhail Baryshnikov, how do you do that? Don't you get dizzy? And she said, well, yes, of course. And the press asked, well, but then how do you dance? And she looked quizzically and she said, we learned to dance dizzy.
Wow.
So that for me has been a metaphor. You do the job. You do what's in front of you.
Yeah, you get it done.
You get it done.
You have to. Okay. Now, another major issue that you sort of alluded to, and I mean, it's been hot on everybody's mind in Los Angeles under the current administration, the ICE raids. Talk to me about just any overall thoughts, your office perspective, what can be done, what is being done under the scope of your responsibility.
My office is on the 8th floor of City Hall East, kitty corner to the Federal Immigration Building.
Yeah.
I had a bird's eye view. Okay.
Yeah.
And on Friday, June 6, 2025, when the National Guard and the Marines rolled into L.A., I was appalled.
Yeah.
I didn't go ask for more lawyers. We pulled together a team internally. And by Saturday, June 7th, I was on the phone with Attorney General Bharat Banta, because probably the strongest legal argument was that the National Guard was under the control of the governor of each state.
Right.
And the National Guard could not be called up without a request from local authorities.
Okay.
I wanted to be sure that Governor Newsom hadn't called them up. I knew he hadn't, but I thought I needed to do my due diligence.
Yeah, of course.
And so, you know, we have a multi-pronged approach. The Attorney General has brought suit in Northern California. I thought about joining. Instead, we filed an amicus brief,
yeah. And
we submitted evidence in support of the AG's lawsuit. Judge Breyer just issued his opinion getting rid of the last 1,000 or so National Guard here. And that opinion cited our papers at least 7 times, including the evidence that we had submitted, because we were ground zero. We were the petri dish. I also brought to it the approach I told you I take to most things, which is collaboration. I don't care who gets the credit.
Yeah.
I want to be effective. And taking out a sword like Don Quixote and tilting at windmills and saying, fight, 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 isn't usually the best way to get things done. So I formed a coalition of 22 cities.
Yeah.
And I'm proud to say that it's cities from Highland Park to Bell Gardens, yeah, to Beverly Hills, to Santa Monica, to Pasadena and Long Beach and beyond. We even at this point have two cities in Orange County, Anaheim and Santa Ana.
Interesting. Okay.
And we have Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
And Camarillo. And so it is a strong, diverse coalition.
Yeah.
There are majority AAPI cities like Monterey Park.
Right. Right.
It runs the gamut of who we are in Southern California.
Yeah.
And we are standing up and saying, not in our backyard. We then looked for a vehicle, because the problem with most of these lawsuits against the federal government,
yeah,
is it's very hard for a local government to prove significant damages that aren't the damages to their residents. And it's very hard for an individual who's been manhandled by, you know, federal agents, I won't say ICE because they're not all ICE,
right,
to get injunctive relief some of the time because they've already been detained. So there isn't a likelihood of irreparable injury in the future. So I spoke to Mark Rosenbaum from Public Counsel, who's fabulous.
Okay.
And we joined a lawsuit that had already been brought by individual lawyers, by the ACLU and Public Counsel on behalf of individuals whose Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights had been violated.
Yeah.
And by joining in a coalition of 22 cities,
yeah,
we really gave a very strong predicate for the injunctive relief. Because we, as sovereign cities, as charter cities, as the local municipality with an interest in our own streets and our own safety and our own businesses and our own residents,
yeah,
we were constantly being attacked. So we could show the irreparable injury and the future harm that's necessary as a linchpin for injunctive relief. And that's what we brought to the table. That's effective, by the way.
Now tell me, okay, I was just going to say, explain what injunctive relief is.
Stop. It's a court order that says, stop what you're doing. You can't do it in the future.
But you're fighting this administration that is not necessarily abiding by orders and, you know, kind of trying to create their own playbook, if not their own rules and laws.
They issued an executive order this morning claiming that they were going to preempt all of our building and permitting in the city of Los Angeles.
I think Trump's quote was he wants to take over the process, right, in California and Los Angeles.
But okay.
Yes.
Tell you something.
Yeah.
We're issuing permits at record pace. The issue is not permitting.
Right.
Okay. A lot of the issue has to do with the complexity of getting financing.
Yeah.
And honestly, and I'm terribly sorry to say this, the laws that Sacramento has passed,
yeah,
on housing and how you can build it and where,
yeah,
you can build it, and it's created a mess that has nothing to do with the city. We get a request, we process the permit at lightning speed compared to what we – I mean, there's, I think, thousands of permits that have been issued that haven't yet been used.
I'll tell you what. I was just in Palisades. We covered the opening of Palisades High School, reopening, I should say, for the first time since the fires.
And how was that?
Honestly, great and spectacular and really inspirational. And people were working hard and people are – it's a huge milestone, to say the least,
yes,
for the community. And that's a really proud community that was, of course, ravaged by the fires. But the point that I was making on that was there is a lot of building. There are a lot of homes going up. And I know that the narrative was that the permits were tough to get. And listen, there's still a lot of wide swaths of land and you know, the overgrowth that happens after the cleanup. But I was happy. I don't want to use the word happy, but I was glad to at least
heartened,
thank you, to at least see the homes going up. So I know the permitting process is moving in the right direction. Tell me about your work in Palisades, because I know that you've been involved on cracking down on price gouging of rentals, amongst other things, in Palisades directly. And Palisades has been a lightning rod. You know, they've sort of really taken a vocal approach to the aftermath of the fires.
Palisades has been a unique community.
Yeah.
and a staple of the landscape on the West Side for as long as I lived there. Two of my favorite hangouts were Palisades Village and the Brentwood Country Mart. Just the truth. Okay.
Brentwood Country Mart. Sweet. Yeah. Come on. Yeah.
I have a lot of friends who lost homes in the Palisades and in Altadena. I had a number of employees who lost homes in both the Palisades and Altadena. And so the wildfires and the devastation that they caused were personal. They're personal to most of us in city government. I went to a press conference shortly after things had calmed down in the fires. It was that last summer. And there were already wildfires coming up on the hillside. And Senator Ben Allen and Councilmember Tracy Park had organized this particular press conference. And I looked out at the wildfires and I said, that's where we need to go. We are a resilient people. We need to focus on the light and the hope and the path forward. So what did my office do? On a personal level, a number of my employees were out there handing out water, handing out food, helping where we could. Most of the city family was pressed into service to do something. As a lawyer, my first job was to figure out, were we liable? Okay? Because that would have created any number of issues. We don't believe we are.
Right.
I hired a law firm. I interviewed law firms that had prior experience with wildfires. I interviewed three firms, and we picked one relatively quickly.
Yeah.
We ran a process. And then I turned my attention to how do we keep the people and the properties that stood safe?
Yeah.
What do we do to? And so we partnered again with the DA, because that's what I do.
Yeah.
And the DA took over the looting. Okay, the attorney general took over a lot of the charitable money that was being raised, the GoFundMe and all the foundation money, because the attorney general has an entire department that is dedicated to that kind of charity fraud. And I took care of curfew enforcement, price gouging, unfair practices. The price gouging is interesting because there's state and city law.
Right.
And the issue of housing, rental housing and for sale housing, and what is housing, because you had RVs, you had all kinds of stuff.
Correct, yeah.
And so you had to figure out how to fit it into the mold. We set up a database. We had people sending in complaints. I think we got 1,100 complaints of price gouging. And we sent out letters to, I don't remember how many, hundreds and hundreds, I think close to 1,000 landlords telling them, don't do this. Most of the time we were able to resolve it without litigation.
Yeah.
So what does resolution look like? They have to give the tenants back the money they price gouged. For those in your audience who may not know what price gouging is, it's like you don't have a choice. When there's a declared state of emergency, you can't raise prices by more than 10% from what they were the day before the emergency for any of the basic necessities of life.
Right.
So if you're a landlord and you were renting or advertising a unit for rent for $3,000, you can't rent it for more than $3,300.
Right.
And that's just math.
And there were all kinds of stories going on. I was hearing those firsthand from Altadena to Palisades about the gouging, especially on the rent for people's homes had burned down and they'd seen listings. I was just out in Altadena actually covering, and somebody was telling me that they saw a listing for $4,000. And then when they showed up, they're like, it's yours if you want it for $7,000 a month. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Report that.
My office will do something about that.
I mean, at the end of the day, we took this very seriously. We have dampened the price gouging. I've gotten some grief, but I sued most recently Airbnb for price gouging and violations.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, if we issue a subpoena and you're a legitimate business, please respond to our subpoena. If you don't respond to our subpoena, we'll send a second one and then a nice request. And then, yes, we will sue you. And it's very simple. And what do we look to do? Okay. Because we're not suing to make money for ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
One, many of these platforms have an algorithm that by its operation violates the law. Because what it does is it takes the highest price in the market and it automatically adjusts the pricing on all of its rentals.
Did not know that. Okay.
Okay. So we want you to stop using those algorithms during a state of emergency. You can't do that. Two, we want restitution for the tenants.
Yeah.
Or for their insurance companies. I mean, I'm not leaving anybody out of this who's paid for something. If it's a violation of the price gouging law, give the money back. And then number three, if we've gotten to the point where you made me sue you, yeah, I want something for our time in trouble. Okay? Fines, penalties, something.
True North Stores beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy six Celsius Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1 liter flavors and get the seventh free. Whether you are craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got a drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's all good.
Okay, so look, those are some major, major relevant issues going on in 2026. You know, some stem back last year, further back. Tell me what your goals are for the future. Is there anything ahead this year that you're looking at that you want to accomplish for your office?
Yes, there's a whole litany of things, but we don't have time for all that.
Right.
Internally, the most important thing is to complete our computer conversion. Which we've sort of been living with and trying to get done.
Right.
And to strengthen the compliance procedures in my own office.
Okay.
Okay. We've got a good start on that, but I want to set it in stone. Externally, I got three bills. I sponsored three bills that got signed into law by Governor Newsom last year. I have three bills this year. And one of them is child related.
Go on.
Right now, the creation of child pornography is a crime, but it isn't a crime for someone to go view it. With the online digital footprints that people leave, I want to make going to view child pornography a separate crime. Make it a misdemeanor if you like. It has to be intentional. Yeah. I mean, if somebody just accidentally stumbles and gets off the website, I'm not trying to criminalize that.
Right.
But I do want to stop the online trafficking of our kids because that's often where it starts and that's a huge profit center.
That seems a very tough thing to enforce slash, I mean, digital footprints chasing that down. Like that's...
There's something called ICAC, which is the Internet Coalition Against Child Something or Other.
Yeah.
One of my prosecutors by the name of Heidi Matz, she spells her name the normal way. H-E-I-T-I. Okay. But she's down at the ICAC conference in San Diego this week. And just because something's hard doesn't mean you don't try to do it.
It's fair.
You know that.
It's fair. It's true. It's true.
How easy was it for you to start this podcast?
Not simple. No. And to keep it going. You're right. You're right. Keep going. Keep
pushing. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Dang right.
That's one thing. I also took up a bill to give city attorneys the power to enforce the antitrust laws, the Cartwright Act of the state of California.
Yeah.
Why? Because if you look at things right now, it has to be the DA or the AG. And a lot of what happens when you're talking about unfair business practices, especially in the area of housing, or food pricing, a lot of it happens locally.
Right.
All politics, all cost of living is local.
Of course.
And so I want the power to be able to do that. And there is a third bill. So Sacramento continues to be important. And I try to do bills that address the biggest problems that the city of LA has. And then lastly, I have started a number of initiatives to help tenants and unsheltered people. So I started the very first community outreach court. Which is an outdoor court. Do you know why you would do an outdoor court?
I can guess, and it's probably wrong, but I would think that it's maybe more comfortable, less intimidating, more welcoming. I don't
know. Let me make it very practical.
Yeah.
You're a single mom on the street.
Yeah.
You've got two little kids. You've got a few belongings that you managed to get out of your apartment before you got bumped to an RV or a car or the street.
Yeah.
And you carry those belongings with you because you have no place to leave them.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have a small dog or cat.
Right.
What do you do if you have to go inside a courthouse?
Can't.
Correct.
Right.
And so what happens to a lot of unhoused people,
yeah,
as they fall out of housing, the RV gets parking tickets. Then they fall into a car. That gets parking tickets. They have thousands of dollars of fines. They have to go take care of them. And they can't because they can't leave their belongings and their children and their pets outside. They'll get taken. So the community outreach court is a way for people to come take care of their legal issues in an environment where they can bring their things with them.
Yeah.
And what we do is on the third Thursday of every month from 9 to noon, we are at the refresh spot in the middle of Skid Row. It is not an initiative that I did by myself again.
Yeah.
Okay. Supervisor Solis, Mayor Karen Bass, the Superior Court, the presiding judge was key to this, and the public defender. And we all collaborate to create a hospitable environment. And then we have service providers all around. So the people who have to come to take care of their business can connect with Section 8 vouchers, with mental health, with job training. I want to expand those kinds of services.
Is that the first of its kind? Was there a precedent for
it's
that?
It's the first of its kind in LA.
Okay.
There was an outdoor court, I believe, in Redondo Beach in Torrance.
Okay.
So it was not the first in Southern California.
Yeah.
But they were few and far between. And really, the impetus and the idea came from the judges themselves. It takes all of us to implement it, but it's a great idea. I also sponsored a bill, AB 1299, that got signed into law that was carried by Assemblymember Isaac Bryan. And what it is, because we are so protective of local control as a charter city, it isn't a mandate. The state should never be doing mandates. What the state should be doing is creating the opportunity for local jurisdictions to opt in or opt out of model codes. So the bill that I took up that got signed was a bill to allow a local jurisdiction like LA to opt into forgiving parking tickets and traffic tickets.
Interesting.
Because the DMV state, until that bill, we couldn't forgive. We could do an installment plan.
Jurisdiction,
So I have a tenants' right activist in my office.
Right.
I have interviews with tenant anti-harassment lawyers. And I'd like to capitalize on some of what I've learned from the price gouging approach to start addressing some of these issues.
Whew, that is pretty comprehensive. And again, just going back to your scope of responsibility and the things that you're accomplishing in LA, very impressive. By the way, Assemblymember Isaac Bryan, another friend of the show, supposed to come on the podcast at some point this year, in fact. Let's get into a little bit of background. I want to honor your time. I know we're running down, but your background is wildly fascinating, right? We already mentioned that you are the first Latina elected to citywide office in this city of Los Angeles, El Pueblo. Like, that's pretty, that's beyond significant. That's fantastic. It's something that'll be a badge of honor forever. Tell us about that background. You were born in Puerto Rico. And then you ended up in college on the East Coast. I want to say it's Swarthmore and then subsequently Columbia.
Yes.
Give us a little bit about that journey. I know that you mentioned your dad was hugely influential and a model figure for you. Tell us, I don't want to rush this, but tell us a little bit about the background.
My mom is third generation Puerto Rican Catholic. She lives with me today. She's 95 years old and I bless her every day.
All right.
Okay. My father was a first generation New York Jew.
Yeah.
When they got married in 1954.
Yeah.
They couldn't find a rabbi to marry them, a priest to marry them, or most judges to marry them. They were married by the only black judge on the Puerto Rican Supreme Court in my grandmama's backyard.
What was your dad doing down in Puerto Rico? If you know?
He had been working as a lawyer in New York.
Yeah.
And his eldest brother was an artist, a painter.
Yeah.
My uncle, Abraham Feldstein, painted under the name Eduardo Reyes in Puerto Rico because he thought nobody would buy paintings by a Feldstein in Puerto Rico. He wanted a native name. And my uncle had gone native.
Okay.
So Papa went down to visit in the dead of winter. And he looked around the island and he said, oh my goodness, what am I doing? And at the age of 30 something,
yeah,
he left New York. He joined a law school buddy of his to open a law firm. Wow. He worked as an insurance claims agent for his first year or two until he learned enough Spanish to take the bar.
Good job.
And he became a titan, an absolute titan of the Puerto Rican bar. His last law firm was called Feldstein, Helpi Hernández y Gotay.
Okay.
So I was raised in that environment in a nuclear family that, you know, it wasn't about what you were.
Right.
It was about the quality of your character. My father, as I said, did a lot of charitable work. So did my mother.
Right.
My mother was vice president of Hadassah. And the only reason she wasn't president is because she wasn't Jewish.
Wow.
And I was raised in an environment of community service, of giving back, of caring for others. I went to Swarthmore primarily because my high school class only had 30 kids. And so the idea of coming to a university so far from home that was very big was terrifying.
Yeah, yeah.
Swarthmore had 300 students in each class. That seemed huge to me.
Right.
Today I would laugh at that. And then Columbia Law School, 7 winters was enough. So when I graduate, well, but what's your biggest problem with winter? Tell me.
Puerto Rico. For me?
Yeah.
I love winter. Even as an LA, I'm the wrong guy to ask. I love the rain. I love the cold. But I mean, the rain and the cold. What?
My biggest problem?
Commuting, traveling, what? Staying warm, what?
Sunshine. I get depressed.
Not having your vitamin D.
There's only sunshine for 4 to 5 hours a day.
Yeah.
I can't
that's
do that.
That's my wife. That's
I
my
can't
wife.
Do
absolutely.
That. Okay, sorry. So I looked in LA, I looked in Dallas, and I looked in Miami.
Okay. What was your thoughts of Los Angeles when you landed here? And had you been here previously?
I was a summer associate here the summer between my second and third year of law school. And no, other than that, I accepted an offer and I moved out. I got an apartment in Beverly Hills. My parents lent me the first and last month's rent because I didn't have the money. My dad also lent me the down payment on a car. I made car payments and I rented furniture from Budget Furniture until I could get enough together to buy furniture.
Wow.
From my vantage point, when I landed here in 1982, LA was a city bustling with possibility.
Yeah.
There was business everywhere. You had the defense industry in the South Bay.
Yep.
You had an apparel and design industry in East LA, second to none. We didn't have a catwalk, but our designs were on the catwalks in Milan, in Paris, in London, in New York, in Hong Kong, you name it. We were there.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had the biggest financial services sector outside of New York. I mean, whether it was Security Pacific National Bank, there's a name from the past.
Right, right.
Okay, Bank of America was headquartered here. Drexel's biggest operations were here.
Wow.
You had all kinds of financial activity. And I haven't even gotten to the juggernaut that was the entertainment industry,
right,
where nobody did entertainment work outside of LA.
Right. Aye, aye, aye.
And there was manufacturing all over the city.
Right.
You know how I know that?
How do you know that?
The two biggest ladder companies in the world.
Yeah.
Warner Ladder and Henry Ladder merged here in LA in 1988, and I was involved in that deal. So there you go.
That's a good fact, by the way. Mental note, John, write that down for LA in a minute, by the way. We're the brick capital of the world at one point, and the ladders. Wow, I had no idea about that.
Where else in the world could a 4'11" Puerto Rican Jewish female with no family, no connections, no contacts come to LA and build the career that I think I built? I was an equity partner at 2 large international law firms.
Yeah.
I had a very successful practice. I made boatloads of money, all of which, not all of which, 90% of which I lost. and rise to become the city attorney as a second career. I can't think of another place in the world where that could happen. Where else can you go where you have the largest Korean diaspora outside of Korea?
Yes.
The largest Armenian diaspora, okay?
Right, right.
The largest Latino diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you come here and the vibrancy of our people, of our neighborhoods, of our culture, the activity and the tolerance and the unity that our communities hold for one another, the few dozen haters or notwithstanding,
right,
is really the defining characteristic of this city. Exploration, respect, animation and joy, doing things because we are Angelenos, remembering that we are Angelenos first,
yeah,
Californians maybe second.
But it is the American dream. That's what I say. They say the American dream doesn't exist anymore, but I say come to Los Angeles. Despite all of our problems, despite issues and perceived issues and narratives, Los Angeles is still the home of the American dream. And I know things have changed, things evolved, but every day we talk to people who came here from different countries, different cities, different places, or from Los Angeles, but you can wake up, you see the sun, you see the mountains, you see the beach, you see the canyons, and you're like, this is endless possibilities. This is where the dream still lives. And if you focus on it, you can still achieve it here in Los Angeles. But after your monologue, I was like, this is the new host of the show right here. Let's go. City Attorney Heidi Feldstein Soto. One last thing that I want to ask, and this is personal to me because I'm Jewish and my wife is Latina. She's Mexican.
So your kids are going to be Jutinos, just like me. There you go.
So I want to know just real quick, and then we'll wrap up after this. But I'm curious, mostly for me personally, and there are others out there, obviously. How was that balance, being a Jewish Latina, and how do you sort of relate to each side of that, or how does that impact you in your life?
When I was a child,
yeah,
I didn't quite fit in anywhere. The Puerto Ricans all thought I was a gringa because my name was Heidi Feldstein Soto. And the Jewish community thought I was a shiksa because my mother was Catholic. Now, I wound up converting to sort of fix that. But some of my coming of age story,
yeah,
some of my growing into an adult meant that my mind shifted from I fit in nowhere and this is a problem to, gosh, the fact that I can't be pigeonholed anywhere,
yeah,
creates possibility. That means I have the possibility of fitting in everywhere. And so I took that as a strength. I became fearless because I could find something in common,
yeah,
with everybody.
That's incredible. And you've accomplished, and again, to your point, like what you've accomplished is incredible. Here you are as the city attorney in the greatest city in the globe, second biggest city in the United States, but the greatest city on the globe, Los Angeles, coming from Puerto Rico, Latina, Jewish. I mean, and you're a very impressive personality. I really, really appreciate you being here and sharing that, sharing your accomplishments. Anything else you want to say? I don't know. I mean, if I'm allowed to sort of give you the floor for a campaign, because I can tell you right now, you have my vote. Are you allowed to say anything along those lines with the campaign rules or anything?
Here's what I will tell you.
Yeah.
There are some of us in this race for whom June 2nd,
yeah,
is our election. If you think you're going to vote in November, the answer is no, because one candidate will take 50% plus one in June.
Yeah.
So whether it's CD11, where our council member Tracy Park also has an opponent, and it's just two of them, or it's city attorney, where there's really two of us. There is a third candidate, but I'm not sure she'll get there.
Okay.
Please go out and vote.
Yes.
Please send in your ballot. Please pay attention. June 2nd is very consequential. As we see a wave of, and as I said, I focus on bread and butter issues, the 80% of the issues 80% of us agree on.
Yeah.
I am a lifelong registered Democrat. I've never been anything else, but I'm also pretty moderate.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're
especially
pragmatic
when
first,
it comes to fiscal
tell.
Policy. Mm-hmm. I believe in common sense.
Yeah.
And so from my vantage point, the wave of a shiny new toy of, oh, this is going to fix everything.
Yeah.
Is alluring. But it is also extraordinarily dangerous. As we head into troubling fiscal times,
oh,
as we face the world in our upcoming events, this is not the time to throw out all the bastards, okay?
Right.
This is the time when I think that our city needs steady, experienced, measured, common sense leadership. And I offer that to you.
Yeah.
And so please vote by June 2nd.
There you go. And you have a great track record, and the issues that we're talking about today, human trafficking, ICE, price gouging, just protecting the community, focusing on the community and what's better for Los Angeles. I really think that you're doing a great job. And I thank you so much for being here. Madam City Attorney Heidi Feldstein Soto, thank you so much. I appreciate this. And, you love Los Angeles. That is my, that's, I already know we're going with that segment.
I adore this city. Really, truly.
There we go. All right, LA. It's been a minute.
True North Stores beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you are craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got a drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.